That's a fragment of a cantata by Agatha della Pietà, rediscovered and sung in Venice by the Australian Chamber Choir. Venice turned orphans into musicians. Agatha was about a day old when she was delivered to the Ospitale della Pietà in March 1712. She became a singer, in time a star soprano, later a master of the choir and a composer. Agatha's cantata survives in a few fragments tracked down in a Venetian library by Elizabeth Anderson, the assistant artistic director of the Australian Chamber Choir. The discovery and restoration of the work and its performance in Venice after 300 years is the subject of a documentary just screened on SBS and now on SBS On Demand. It's called Agatha's Story. Elizabeth joins me from Melbourne. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
These orphanages in Venice, what were they up to? What was this association of foundlings and music?
I think that they wanted to give the children a better life. They wanted to give them prospects of finding a better life outside the orphanage. I think that by giving them a musical education, they thought that they were making them into ladies, marriageable ladies.
And also serving God?
Oh, yes, I'm sure that was very important at the time.
You knew about these institutions. They were a sort of a phenomenon in Europe, were they not? I mean, people travelled to Venice to hear these choirs and orchestras of women.
Well, evidently there were four of these charitable institutions in Venice in the 18th century. They'd been there for quite some time, and they were competitive with each other for the quality of the concerts that they were able to produce. So they were all doing music, but the Ospedale della Pietà was doing the best job because they had Antonio Vivaldi teaching for them.
Yes, they had the teacher as one of the greatest composers of all time, Vivaldi. And was his position, known? What happened to his music, the music he composed while working for the Ospedale?
Well, composing for the women of the Ospedale della Pietà was part of the job description. Practically everything that he wrote during the time that he was signed up with them, apart from his operas, was workshopped at the Ospedale with their orchestra of all women and their choir. It possibly was one of the most wonderful gifts that a composer could have, to have a local choir and orchestra that would just automatically perform all of your music. And it would have been very easy for him to make small changes if he thought that anything needed to be improved after he heard it the first time.
He could workshop with this
exactly
extremely skilled choir and orchestra. Mm. Do we know whether Agatha was a student of his?
No, we don't. We can practically place her in the building at the same time as Vivaldi, and it's very likely that she would have accompanied him into the rehearsals because she was on staff, and whenever the male teachers were visiting, they had to be accompanied by a female member of staff. So they met for sure, but how much they knew each other, we might never find out. We don't have any documentation to prove it either way.
How much do we know of Agatha?
Quite a lot, actually. When I first discovered her cantata and I had these manuscripts and was extremely excitedly keying them into my computer and working out which bits were missing, I didn't even know her birth and death dates. We had her somewhere around the middle of the 18th century. And yes, it looked to me like she was influenced by Vivaldi, but that was all we knew at the time when I started reconstructing the cantata. But since then, Vanessa Tonelli has done a lot of research. She's a professor in the United States at the University of South Mississippi, and we've got to know each other through this project. She's been extremely helpful. She's published some articles about the women of the Pietà and filled in all the dates for us. We know that she was born in 1712, died in 1769, and a lot of what went on in between at the Pietà, all of the different positions that she held, the work that she did, what it was like being a student there. It's really becoming increasingly filled out.
But always known, because there's a register there which we see in the documentary, always known are the circumstances of her arrival. Tell us about the Scafettar.
It was a tiny little turnstile in the outside wall of the building. Scafetta, I don't think it has any other meaning in Italian. It was so small that only a newborn baby could be fitted onto its little tray, and it was then turned and the baby ended up inside the building, and the person who had deposited the baby was able to leave it there anonymously and walk away. But usually the babies were left with a little note saying something about who they were, and nearly always the note would say that a parent was intending to come back for them. They often left a little token, a piece of paper that had been torn in half, and they would leave half of the paper with the baby and keep the other half so that if they came back, they could use that to prove that they were the parent of this baby and that they had a right to take it back.
Oh, heartbreaking.
It is. Well, nobody ever came for Agatha.
No. And like all of the kids, well, the little, as I understand, they were all sent out to families until they were, what, 10 or 11 years old, and then they came back, and then they lived in the orphanage.
Yes, so from a newborn to the age of 9, they would be first sent to a wet nurse, and then they would be fostered with a family. And at the age of 9, they would return to the orphanage and begin their education. And in Agatha's case, she joined the choir at the age of 11 and, to all intents and purposes, became a professional musician from that age onwards.
And climbed through the ranks within the institution.
Absolutely. She became a teacher. She was teaching singing by the age of 16. By the time she was 18, she was recognised as a performer and a soprano soloist. And then she went on to become an employee of the institution. At the age of 30, she was teaching external students. And then finally, at the age of 39, she was appointed the maestra di coro, the master of the choir. And so that was one of the most important jobs in the institution. But she went on to run the institution outright by the time she was, well, it was the last, I think it killed her actually.
She sounds a really formidable woman. And all this.
Whoa, it's frightening.
And she had only one finger on her left hand, and then there were fingers missing on her right hand, and there were toes missing. And
I think her right hand was intact. It was just the left hand and toes missing from both feet.
Yeah. Well, this is ABC Radio National. I'm David Marr on Late Night Live, and I'm talking to Elizabeth Anderson about Agatha's story, the documentary that has just been released on SBS. Now, Elizabeth, was Agatha known to be a composer? How did you get on the track of this music?
I just did a search on the internet. I didn't come up with much immediately. I started putting in Italian keywords. This was back in 2021, and I don't think that AI was quite what it is now. But when I put in Italian words, I came up with a bunch of articles in Italian, and that's where I got the leads. I found out the names of composers from the Ospedale della Pietà during the 18th century. They were all composers who could have had an association with Antonio Vivaldi. There were three names, Agatha and Michelina and Santa. So I went looking for those three names, did a library search, and their works or fragments of them were all in one library, the Conservatorium Library in Venice.
How much is there?
A lot of fragments. It was quite overwhelming to look at the list, and I really couldn't tell anything from the list, and there were no examples online for me to look at. So I wrote to the librarian and very quickly started a conversation, and she was able to furnish me with an almost complete set of manuscripts for this particular cantata of Agatha's called Ecce Nunc.
Which is set to the text of?
It's Psalm 134.
Right. But why fragments? Why weren't you able to get your hands on a complete score?
Back in those days, a full score wasn't a thing. People didn't use full scores. Conductors didn't tend to have a full score in front of them. They might be playing the first violin part and just directing the orchestra from there, or they might be playing the harpsichord or the organ part. The idea of a full score is more of a 19th century thing. So what they had was part books. Each member of the orchestra would have their own book on their music stand, and other girls would have been given the job of copying the music into the part books. So all they really had was a set of parts, and that's all we have left, the part books.
But the parts weren't complete.
Some of the part books are missing. Maybe the naughty girl who last used it didn't hand it in.
Just on that point, what's the evidence of any performance of this work in the last 300 years? Anything?
The fact that it's been copied into the part books gives us a pretty surefire idea that it was performed. They wouldn't have bothered to have it copied into the part books unless they were going to perform it.
Do you think
they wouldn't have copied the music into the part books just for fun, because everything that was played from the part books was played in their rehearsals ready for performance.
So at least in her time it was played.
It must have been, yes.
It must have been. Tell me, Elizabeth, do you think it's good?
Yes, I do. I think it's wonderful. I think it sounds really just like Vivaldi. And that, of course, opens a whole interesting topic as to whether maybe Vivaldi borrowed some of the orphan's compositions and used them under his own name.
Oh, you beast. Let's listen to a bit. Now, how much of that is you and how much of that is Agatha?
The melody is Agatha. The bass line is Agatha. The alto part and the viola part are Agatha. Sorry, second violin. The viola part and the tenor part are both mine in that movement. And the movement starts with a soprano solo. I know that because we have no words for that part of the manuscript. And so I put it all together and realised that the first line of text was completely missing. So, of course, it must have been a solo because it wasn't in the part book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to write that unaccompanied
solo.
No, I had the full orchestral accompaniment. I had the violin parts, no viola. I had the cello part. So all I had to do was work out where the words went and make up the tune.
But you say emphatically in the documentary, I am not a composer.
No, I'm not a composer. I'm a harpsichordist. It's just playing basso continuo backwards. It's just the same process, only in the opposite order. Well, I'll explain that. When you're a harpsichordist, you're given a bass line and you're expected to be able to work out the harmonies of the ensemble that you're playing with by just reading the bass line. So when I say I'm not a composer, basically I was just doing that backwards, reading the available material and extrapolating a melody from it. It's not really composing and it's not guessing. It's an educated guess.
And Australians can now hear this music?
Yes, we heard it first before any of the Europeans who are alive today. But we have premiered it in Venice.
And what was the response?
Oh, it was wonderful. They were absolutely delighted and so ironic that Australians should bring it back to them.
Elizabeth, thanks for joining us on the show. I've been talking to Elizabeth Anderson, the Assistant Artistic Director of the Australian Chamber Choir, about the documentary just released on SBS about the discovery and performance of a cantata by the orphan composer Agatha della Pietà. And it's to be performed in Australia as well, and we'll have the performance dates up on the website.